Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and I am your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Before I introduce today's guest, I do want to thank our sponsor, QBAC. QBAC is a next-generation advancement solution that reimagines alumni engagement to drive giving. QBAC doesn't just measure alumni engagement scores. It uses academic research in cognitive science and positive psychology to actually increase an alum's willingness to give. Quantitative data, such as capacity, gets a prospect into your pipeline, but qualitative data, such as impact stories, gets a prospect through your pipeline. QBAC's AI-driven system uncovers actionable insights and automatically delivers them to major gift officers for use in cultivation. Learn how to raise more money with less by going to www.qbac.com to schedule a free demo. I would also like to tell you about Responsive's training. If you're looking to align your entire team around a shared understanding of effective fundraising, let's talk about Responsive's four frameworks. If your culture doesn't feel right, before you begin any significant planning, launch a capital campaign, let's ensure that everyone is on the same page. How about inviting us to be on site with your board, leadership team, volunteers, and staff for your next planning event? If you prefer a virtual event, that'll work too. Let's get your team thinking critically and more carefully about the road ahead. Shoot me an email. I will also put some information in the show notes. Hi, Andrew. It's a delight to have you on the Fundraising Talent Podcast. You're one of our first guests here for 2021. I'm sure you, just like I, are delighted to have wrapped up 2020 and be experiencing now a brand new year, a fresh new year. We won't unpack 2020 today, but... Before we dive into our topic, how about you just remind our listeners, you've been on here before, I think you've been on here a couple of times, how about you just remind our listeners who you are?
Yeah, thanks, Jason. Appreciate the opportunity to be back with you. Excited to talk about something that is not 2020 fundraising results. I am, as you said, Andrew Olson. I'm president of Resource One Fundraising Group. We're a direct response fundraising agency that serves nonprofits and ministries of all shapes and sizes. I've been at this game now for a little over 20 years and have had the honor of working inside nonprofits as well as on the outside as a consultant. So that's who I am, and I'm excited to have a conversation with you today.
Andrew, you have recently, I have noticed you've recently made some changes. Tell me about that.
Yeah, you know, I've been at Resource One Fundraising Group now for probably a little over 60 days. So I feel like I've finally found the restroom. I know where the letterhead is, all that kind of good stuff. But I made a transition from another fundraising agency to this one. And really what drove that change for me is that, Resource One Fundraising Group is a MORE company. MORE is the largest provider of fundraising services in the direct response space in the nation. And really what's awesome about what I get to do every day now is we have great talent, and we have an amazing tool set and resources around data and analytics, and the firepower on that side makes developing campaigns for clients so much more effective. And really helps us get into the insight that drives consumer and donor behavior. So that's really why I joined MORE and joined Resource One Fundraising Group, to be able to take advantage of some new and developing tools around artificial intelligence and neuroscience and neuromarketing principles to really help drive fundraising results for organizations.
Andrew, are these guys, I think this is the first time I've heard of the MORE, MORE group. It's a new brand for me. Are these guys pretty pretty big in the parachurch space, the rescue space that you and I are sort of common to?
Yeah, a lot of ministry experience. Maybe not as much in the kind of rescue mission world that I've lived in for a long time, but
yeah.
that's a passion area for me. So it's an area we'll be growing in the future for sure. But they've done a lot of work with national and international ministries, a lot of effort and work with veteran service organizations, and even outdoor organizations like Ducks Unlimited, folks like that, and just a lot of social service work as well.
Cool. Sounds like they got pretty big scale going on. That's some pretty big shops. You can bring that to a number of the people in our shared space. Andrew, you know that I have been on this journey myself to really sort of change up, stir up, and maybe think up fundraising a little bit. I thought you and I would talk about outsourcing today, and I really want to get that sort of on my agenda this year, but I really wanted to hear what your thoughts about that are. How about we talk about that?
Let's do it.
Yeah. So tell me what your thoughts are about nonprofit organizations outsourcing their fundraising efforts.
Yeah. So I think, there are certain things that nonprofit organizations should just outsource as a matter of course when it comes to development and fundraising. And obviously there are other things that they shouldn't, right? So, I'm not a proponent of any organization trying to fully outsource, say, their relationship fundraising, right? Guys like you and firms like yours can definitely add value from a coaching and consulting and an advising perspective and really kind of laying out the framework that they need. But, in my experience, the only truly authentic ask comes from someone who's sitting at the table every day, right?
Yeah, totally.
Having said that, I think there's a lot outside of relationship fundraising that organizations can and should outsource. In fact, I think, you'd be hard pressed to convince me that it doesn't make sense for an organization to outsource the majority of their annual fund work, particularly if they're involved in things like special events, direct mail, digital fundraising. If they're using phone fundraising internally right now, those kind of things, it just doesn't make sense to me not to outsource a majority, if not all of that. Just because that, and I've got four or five kind of pillar reasons why it makes sense. The first is, and you'll know this because you live this every day with your clients and organizations you talk to, but I have discovered in my 20 years doing this work that outsourced solutions are much easier for organizations to hold accountable for performance than our internal employees, right?
Yeah.
You and I have had many a glass of bourbon or a cup of coffee together and many a conversation that started with, you won't believe the issues that my client or this organization is dealing with, and they just refuse to address them internally, right? So that accountability piece is so important, particularly in these areas. I mean, these are often the most expensive initiatives that an organization is going to undertake from a fundraising perspective. And they often come with the lowest ROI. So you really don't have an opportunity to not get it right. Mm-hmm. And what I've seen is that when an organization pulls this kind of stuff in-house, two things happen. One, those organizations don't typically measure their internal soft cost of execution.
Yeah.
So that never becomes part of the equation. And two, when a program doesn't work, or when a test fails, something doesn't go right, no one is held accountable. And by held accountable, I don't mean saying, you screwed this up, you're fired. But in many organizations, people are just unwilling to have the hard conversation to say, hey, we didn't do this right. It didn't work because of that. Our revenue is down by X percent. Our programs are going to be impacted by that. How do we do it better in the future? It's just a conversation that's rarely had when the solution provider is an internal employee. Whereas as a consultant, I can tell you, I have that conversation all the time with my clients, and there's a very crystal clear expectation of, this is what we said was going to happen. This is what we delivered. Either we delivered on target, we delivered slightly above target, or we delivered below target, and here's the plan to get it better, right? But that conversation is much easier to have when you're looking across the table at a contractor or a consultant or, you know, external provider than it seems to be when it's someone who's on your staff.
Yeah. So, Andrew, you know, one of the reasons I've always enjoyed talking with you, especially being that you're from the direct response space, and you know what my critique is on most of this arm's length fundraising sort of stuff. Let's sit on that issue of ROI for a while. What is it? Because part of what I'm trying to say to my clients and to anybody else who's listening to me is the idea that if we can outsource that lowest margin, highest volume sort of fundraising activity to somebody who can actually bring in more efficiencies and more strategy to that, then you as the organization can also now go to your high context, high touch, and highest ROI. Why is that story not necessarily being told by people like yourself in your space?
So we actually tell it quite often.
Let's clarify. Yes. You're probably one of the few guys in your space, in our bigger space, that I think tells the story best. So why are your colleagues in the direct response space not telling that story?
Yeah, I think it comes down to the fact that if you tell that story and if you sell an organization on a concept like this, you have to be involved in some messy change management to help support it.
I love that word messy.
Right? It is what it is.
Yes, sir.
The number of times that I've had this exact conversation and an executive director or chief development officer has looked across the table at me and said, I get what you're saying. I agree with you. What do I do with the three people on my staff who manage this program internally right now if we make this decision?
Yeah.
And so, you know, as a partner, my job is to come alongside them and say, not only can we deliver, you know, best in class direct response fundraising at a price that works for you and at performance levels that'll make you successful, but if I sell you on that whole concept, I've got to be the one to come alongside you and manage the change with you, right? Yeah. And I think a lot of agencies that are in my space don't have an appetite for that. And you know, if they can get a quick win from an organization that already understands it and is not set up to manage it internally, they're going to go there much more frequently than they are willing to say, yeah, let's come in and help you change the people and help you change the culture to make this effective for you the way that it requires if you tell the story that we're talking about.
Yeah, it's interesting that you sort of frame it that way. And again, I don't hear people telling the story the way that you and I are essentially sort of beginning to tell the story here this morning. But it's interesting because I think sort of reading between the lines of that executive director's comment about what am I going to do with those two or three employees if I partner with you in this particular way. I see so many organizations out there, and I know you've seen this too, Andrew. Essentially, we've got people on staff, on the payroll, essentially administrating the relationship with a guy like you. And oftentimes that administration and that relationship is not an essential in that you guys normally know what you're doing. You can execute this thing pretty efficiently, pretty effectively. You don't have to be managed. But in some ways, the greatest risk that I don't think that the people who are quote unquote administrating relationships with an outsourced sort of solution realize that ultimately that outsourcing partner could basically do them in for their job. And so what I want more and more fundraising professionals to see is that if I can partner with a guy like Andrew and get him to run my direct mail stream, and if I can get somebody who can run my special events, and if I can get somebody who can run my automation and my online stuff, then I can actually do something that's contrasting, that's not actually the same as what Andrew's doing, but I can actually learn and develop a skill that I can do better than Andrew, because Andrew can in reality do most of what I'm essentially facilitating or administrating better than I can.
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, when I think about this, we're talking about fundraising, but at its core, this is about a business model decision.
Yeah.
Right? It's not at all about fundraising. I mean, the fundraising is the byproduct of deciding on the business model that you're going to adopt. And so, you know, as I think about this, you know, it's not that our goal is ever to put people out of work.
No.
Right? You know, and so when we have those conversations with executive directors, their initial thought, and oftentimes the staff doing the work has an initial thought of, oh, crap, there's an agency coming in here. We're all going to lose our jobs. Where the leap we have to make is going from the thought, you know, that scarcity mindset of, well, if I hire these guys, I have to let these other people go, to saying, well, wait a minute. If I have 10,000 donors in my donor base and I have three people, once I train them well, those three people can start managing relationships with several hundred, you know, of our donors, and we can start to improve our relationships, we can start to improve our revenue, and we can get scale and margin that we could never get if those people were managing events and managing a direct mail program and managing a digital program on a day-to-day basis. But the leadership in the organization and at the board level have to be willing to change their thinking about their business model before we can ever get to that solution.
So let's just cut to the chase. Are those three individuals that largely for the time being, or up to the point when that agency comes in, like yourself comes in and says, look, man, I'm going to take this program, what I call this lane one fundraising, I'm going to take this program to another level. Are they scared to step up and go to another level themselves? Is essentially, are we talking about fear and that because Andrew, I mean, the challenge I'm running into everywhere, and I've run into this for the same two decades that you have, we've been in this space about the same length of time, is I want to have a guy like you step up and go to the next level in the same way that I want the full-time employee to go to the next level. And the next level for them means picking up that telephone after that gift that your system has been able to sort of secure for perhaps the first, the second, the third, those initial gifts. And start taking somebody out to lunch. And I see so many of our fundraising professionals out there, they don't know how to take somebody out to lunch. And the best thing I can convince a client to do, Andrew, is to partner with a guy like you and let those three people, if I'm not mistaken, and this is, these are my stats, but I think you're going to back me up on this. I mean, a guy like you can deliver on a rich portfolio, 125, 150 donors for each one of those three people, and they can start dramatically increasing the expectations for those donors and create what I call a middle lane. Am I right?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's no doubt in my mind that it's possible because we've done it.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a number of clients that we've done exactly that for, and they are structured and set up to really harness that and be successful. Absolutely. Here's, I think, the challenge, and you'll get this as soon as I say it, you know, but because of what the expectation has been on those three people and the kind of work we've been asking them to do, we hired from a candidate profile that is probably not the same candidate profile that you would use when you're hiring a gift officer.
Yeah.
We trained them essentially to be project managers, right? I mean, they might be fundraisers in their own right from a direct response perspective, but no one's probably ever invested in them to develop the kind of skills and experience you need to be a relationship fundraiser. And their expectations have never aligned with relationship development, right? They've aligned with 90-day and 12-month revenue cycles, yeah, rather than long-term relationships,
yeah,
right? So while some people are probably very afraid of making those leaps, I don't want to put it all on the fundraiser because I don't think ultimately it's their issue, right? I think they were hired for a role, and they, in many cases, are doing that role under the current expectations probably really well, or as best as they're equipped to do. But what we're saying is the landscape is going to change. And so we've got really one of two options, maybe three options. We either have to hire different people, or we have to acknowledge that the people that we have in the seats today are skilled and capable and eager. And so then we have to invest to train them and to develop the skill sets that are necessary. And then the third thing, I think, is that you know, you can't just train somebody, and you know this as well as I do because you actually do this work every day. You can't just train somebody and then walk away from them, right? But in so many organizations, you know, the thinking is, well, wait a minute. I sent you to this training, or, you know, through AFP or through this company here or that company there, or you know, you watch these webinars and these you know, YouTube sessions on how to do this, and then I let you loose and I'm on to figure out, you know, how to optimize programs now, or I've got to deal with administrative issues. If there's not that commitment to long-term coaching, really in the way that you walk alongside an employee who's learning these skills, then the best training in the world is going to be useless because they're not going to develop the skills in the way that you and I know is necessary for them to be successful. So I think, you know, yes, fear is holding a lot of people back. It's not just holding the fundraisers back. I think it's holding the executives back and the board back as well. But we can only address it through one of those three solutions or a mix of them.
So Andrew, let's loop back to outsourcing partnerships with a guy like you. So part of what I think I want most of my clients to hear is that a guy like you, a shop like yours, can sort of bring to the table so much more when it comes to getting lane one right, when it comes to getting that new donor acquisition and that donor retention for those first 2 to 3 gifts, for example, in terms of being able to get that right. There are so many different things that you can bring to the table differently and to a much greater sort of level of efficiency and effectiveness that the average Joe development officer, the local rescue mission, the local food bank, a lot of these mom and pop charities that you and I have interacted with over the last 20 years, they just don't have that sort of, they may even strategically in their mind get some of the things that you sort of formulate in your head all the time. I mean, I know you and I think very similarly, but yet I know there's things that you grasp about your work that I don't grasp. And I got to say, you know, my local rescue mission here, there's things that you can bring to the table that they just cannot bring to the table themselves. I mean, here in my small, you know, central Pennsylvania community, they can't bring that to the table. Am I right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's really sort of three categories that I think about around this. And the first one is investment, right? So at the end of the day, my business is about three things. It's about talent, primarily. It's about technology. And it's about data.
Yeah.
Right? And so the investments that an enterprise like mine makes in those three areas are significant and ongoing. And the reason why we can make those significant and ongoing investments is because I can spread those expenses out as I work with 20 or 30 different clients, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, let's use data as an example.
Sure.
Right? So our enterprise has built a cooperative database called Simio Cloud. It's an incredibly advanced data platform that allows us to do some really sophisticated things to identify behaviors and identify demographics and psychographic traits that drive giving behavior, right? It is allowing us to advance fundraising results beyond what we've seen in the past. An average nonprofit could never invest in that.
Yeah.
Even the largest nonprofits don't have the money to do it, right? But because I can spread it across, and we've spread it across an enterprise of multiple companies,
sure.
You know, and multiple companies having multiple clients each, no single client has to bear the brunt of that full cost, right? But they can all leverage the value of it. The same thing in digital. You know, if we're going to start doing digital advertising to acquire new donors, you know, you really can't effectively do that without something called a demand side platform, which is an automated media buying platform in the digital space. If you were to go out and buy one of those yourself as a nonprofit, that's a 7-figure investment. Now, you know, an organization like St. Jude or World Vision or AARP, you know, a mega brand, they could invest in that. But then they'd also have to invest in all of the talent to support it, right? And not just the one person who knows the strategy, but what about the technical people who have to support it on the back end? And I mean, you end up having this downstream effect of cost that, you know, one single organization, even if they quintupled their revenue, probably couldn't sustain the cost over time, right? So from a simple cost perspective, the value of an agency like ours is that we can spread that expense and spread that pain, but deliver the value to every individual client as if they had direct access to that talent and those technologies and that data when they otherwise couldn't do it themselves. You know, I think the other thing is the market moves so quickly right now that an organization either has to partner with somebody who is doing this day in and day out for multiple clients in order to stay ahead of the market, or they're always going to be chasing the next best thing, right? So, you know, we have about 40 people on our direct payroll,
yep,
right? And those people are strategists. They are account managers. They are creative directors and graphic designers and writers, and they are project managers and data analysts. And, you know, when I think about the nonprofits that have built a program internally, it's rare that they have all of that talent in-house because they simply can't afford it, right? And the value of having all of that talent is that those people are scanning the market and looking out in the environment and saying, well, what's happening that we need to be thinking about today that's going to impact tomorrow's revenue, not just today's revenue? Most of the organizations that I've worked with that have tried to in-house things can barely keep up with today. It's not a knock on them. It's just a function of the fact that they're dealing with limited resources. And so they've got to deal with just today, right? But if you're in that mode of always dealing with today, you can never think about the future and plan for the future in a meaningful way that allows you to capitalize on opportunity that you see on the horizon, right? And then I think the third big thing is because we work with dozens of national and international and local and regional organizations, we have vision to the results and the testing and the data that is working and not working across about 1,000 organizations across our enterprise, right? So the benefit to a client there is they don't have to test it and try it and fail as frequently as they would if they were in-house trying something, right? If a client comes to me and says, hey, I'd like to mail something like this to my donors, I have the benefit of saying, you know what? We've tested that 7 times and it's failed 6 times. This is the only way it's worked. So if you're going to do it this way.
Right.
Or I can come to them and say, hey, 9 of my clients are doing this and it's working well for all 9 of them.
Yes.
You should invest in this.
Yes.
Right. There's not really a functionality or a infrastructure anywhere that I'm aware of where an individual nonprofit can plug into others and say, what are you doing that's working and where have you failed? Because even though they might not be competing in the same programmatic space, most charities still feel like there's a competition for donor dollars. So they're not necessarily going to share that kind of information. But at scale, I can see that across our entire enterprise and across our client base. And we can start to impact and drive improvements in results and mitigate risk for our clients based on what we're seeing elsewhere.
Yeah.
So those, in my mind, those are the three really compelling reasons why an organization should say, you know what, maybe let's think differently about our business model. Let's shift our investment and partner with an external agency like ours and let us focus on the relationship development side and the things that we can only do or we can uniquely do in-house and let you guys run the rest of it in the most successful way possible.
So Andrew, before I let you go, there's one other observation that I've sort of made, and I don't know that you and I have ever talked about this, but it's certainly about this, what I call this lane one fundraising. And it's the, when you think back on mine and your career, you know, we've been in this space for a little bit more than 20 years. And what's very characteristic of lane one, differently than what I call lane two, is that your space is very much always evolving. And so if you think about it, when you and I came into the fundraising early in our careers, direct response would have primarily been in the mail. And your world right now is looking at the way that fundraising is working. And you're thinking, okay, how much of direct mail needs to go to online? And so you're constantly sort of having to keep up with this constantly sort of evolving And you don't know, nor do I, that in 10 years, it's going to transition back to mail, or it's going to transition to something that we don't even see and understand right now. And so what I think part of the challenge is that the opportunity sort of intertwined in some of the observations you've just made about these partnerships with these larger enterprises, these larger organizations, is that you guys get to stay ahead of the curve. It's in your interest to stay ahead of the curve on where this sort of the evolution of what we would call lane one is sort of playing out. Am I right?
You're absolutely right. And it really follows consumer behavior, yep. Right? So I don't think anybody in 1985 would say, well, we got to go invest in email. We got to go figure that out, right? You know, the only reason you go there is because you experience disruption. And as a commercial enterprise, you can either, survive, thrive, or die, right? And so, guys like you, I want to thrive. And so, our enterprise, we make those big investments, and we scan the market to say, what's changing? So, to your point, today it's a mix of email and digital media and SMS and direct mail, but it's also all of those things together in an ecosystem.
Yeah.
Right. And so, as the market changes, as Apple impacts us, as Amazon impacts us, as, other brands like that change the consumer experience, that trickles over into the donor expectation.
Yeah.
Because, a donor is not just a donor. They are an individual with relationships and experiences, and they're a consumer. And all of that gets brought to bear in how they make their philanthropic decisions. So if we are not deploying tools and resources to mimic and support the donor's expectation as a consumer, we're going to fall behind. So it's absolutely in our interest to follow that and to really be on the forefront of it in a way that any individual nonprofit couldn't keep up.
See, and I think you put that really well, and we'll wrap up on this just to sort of reiterate what you're saying, Andrew. I certainly want to give you an opportunity to let all of our listeners know how to find you. But I think so often nonprofit organizations, sort of like my local rescue mission, for example, think that they're competing with St. Jude. But in reality, what they're competing with is they're competing with Amazon. And
absolutely,
if they don't understand the way Amazon works, if they don't partner with a guy like you who's perhaps working with a client like St. Jude, but also paying attention to how is a company like Amazon sort of driving consumer behavior that translates into lane one sort of charitable giving, I think our orientation, sort of our focus of attention, is in the wrong place. And so I want my clients to have the benefit of a guy like you who's sort of looking at an activity from a different lens, because St. Jude or the Humane Society down the street isn't really, in my mind, who my local rescue mission's competing with. They're competing with that consumer behavior, that option to, when I'm scrolling through my phone to purchase purchase another gadget or give to my local rescue mission to provide somebody with a plate of food next week.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, if we look at it from a macro perspective, 2.5% of GDP goes to philanthropy.
Yeah.
Right. And it's been that way for 40 years or something like that. So when we think about competition, yes, there is competition among nonprofit organizations, but you're absolutely right. The greater competition, the scarier competition in my mind, is the commercial world, because they have much larger budgets.
Yeah.
And they have much more aggressive marketing programs and sales programs. So when we think about trying to, capture attention and capture market share and as a result of that, capture revenue, I'd argue, like you said, Amazon and the likes of, other competitors of theirs are a much bigger threats, maybe not the right word, but a much bigger concern.
Yeah.
In my mind, and I want us and our clients to be thinking about how do we mimic an Amazon experience for our donors, much more so than how do I mimic the experience that ABC Community Hospital gives to their donors, because it's almost that experience is almost irrelevant to my supporters relative to how I engage with them.
Yeah, Andrew. I mean, there you have it, folks. You know, the reason why I want organizations to be thinking about in 2021, the idea of partnering with a guy like Andrew to outsource what I call lane one fundraising is exactly what Andrew just said. What we're hearing here is the idea that you can be concerned about competing perhaps with the mom and pop, you know, Humane Society down the street or the big, you know, regional hospital that's across town. But what you're really competing with, and what the reason you really perhaps want somebody like Andrew on your side, is because you're competing with Amazon and other consumer driven enterprises. And that's a pretty compelling thought. Andrew, it has certainly been a pleasure to have you on the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm delighted that you've helped me kick off 2021 for our listeners. I think we've done our part to perhaps convince at least a couple of our listeners to reach out to a guy like you. How would they do that if they're interested in having a conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. So two easiest ways. You can call me. My number is 612-201-1967. That's my direct number. Or you can email me. It's aolson@moredmgroup.com. That's A-O-L-S-E-N at moredmgroup.com, or you can always find me on LinkedIn.
Hey, bud, it's been a pleasure. You're always welcome back.
Jason, really appreciate the opportunity. It was a great conversation, and happy 2021.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must-read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.